All right, we're at the Dogwood Diner, right? And what town are we in?
Dunsmuir,
California. We've crossed the border. We're on our tour. We're on our big Symphonies in Seed and Soil tour, and this little diner has organic food on the menu. So we're having breakfast here.
And who's we?
Oh, right. So it's me, Paul Wheaton, your Lord and Master. No, is that right? No. Did I get the title wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah, the title's wrong. whatever my title is, Lord of the Jungle? What am I going by on the trip?
Supreme
Evil Commander?
Evil Empire Tyrant.
Evil Emperor / Tyrant. Okay. And Jocelyn, who's keeping me reined in. What's your title?
I'm the tour coordinator.
Okay, that sounds like proper. And then we've got Captain Badnock, land whale pilot. and then
Ivind, I'm the navigator.
Navigator, Ivind. So, and then here's the food. Oh, that's me. So today we're going to talk about natural cleansers. It was a listener question, but first we're going to talk about our trip a little bit, I think. So how long have we been on the road now? Oh, yeah. Excellent. So I think we've been on the road 6 days.
I've lost track of what day it is. I have to look at my cell phone to see what day it is.
I think today's the 30th.
Yeah, we're Thursday. We left on Saturday. So, yeah, that's 6 days.
6 days. Okay, wow. So I think that the full proper tour is 3 weeks. And then, we had some pre-tour stuff. I think we've been out of Missoula for 2 weeks now.
Jeff and I left on the 15th.
Yeah. And then we picked up Ivan just at the beginning of the tour, like the night before the tour. So, let's see, we've already recorded a podcast. And in fact, we were going to record another podcast with Jacqueline and Joseph on bee stuff. But we ran out of time. Like, when we got done recording the first podcast, and we were, like, getting all the... Like, we've got a race to go and get to the next thing, and then the land whale wouldn't start. We had to get Joseph to give us a jump. And then we got there, and then Jocelyn found a place. It was a Sunday, and Jocelyn found a place that would actually sell us a new battery, like 2 blocks away from where the event was, which on a Sunday turned out to be a big trick.
Finding a place open. Yeah. So adventures.
And that presentation went well. What was I presenting on that night? Making the big bucks? No.
They're clear. Missoula, Montana. They just brought in two cases of Trout Slayer beer made in Missoula, Montana.
So they're bringing in their stock in the place with beer because in California you just can't have a restaurant without Montana beer. It turns out. We just learned this.
Missoula beer.
Yeah. Not just any old Montana beer, but Missoula beer.
Step Holster was the theme when...
Right. We were doing the Step Holster stuff. Man, I've got a lot of awesome... What is this? This is the Angel Biscuit. I got to take a bite. All right, you guys talk for a minute, and I'm gonna take a bite.
So you presented on Step Holster and had lots and lots of good questions. It ran late because of all the good questions. And... then I would like to say we're skipping past Adrian's question about the about your land purchase specifications or your land search specifications, because that would be a whole podcast in itself. We have to be organized, a little more organized for that than here at breakfast. So we skip past that one, and we're going on to Travis's question about alternatives to cleaning products. So we're just going to, you know, none of us...
It's easier.
Yeah. Well, and we don't feel like we're experts in this space, but we'll go through... I know you have strong opinions in this space, of course. Not unusual for you. And we'll go through some of the things we do and some of the things we've talked about. So, okay, thank you. And is Jeff coming? Is this coming? That's it?
Okay.
Oh, and I also had a side of bacon, I think. Huh? There should be two. He had one and then one for me.
So then, we had a great time there. People seem to have, and in fact, and we recorded a podcast there, didn't we? We kind of recorded the parts where they did the Q&A. So people have already know about that one.
Oh, okay.
So then we left there. Where did we stay that night? Oh, we stayed at Jeff's sister's house. And then we got up in the morning and we went and looked at Silver Creek Falls, where it's one of those enormous waterfalls, and you can kind of walk behind the waterfall.
It was gorgeous, and Jeff's nephew gave us a great tour, and Ivan spotted an unusual snake.
Yeah, at this point we don't know yet what snake it is, neither did the ranger,
Dylan.
Yeah, but we took some pictures, and he will get some experts to take a look at them.
So I'm eating an angel biscuit. And they assure me it's not actually made out of angels. But they do have angels chained up in the back, and they're requiring them through slave labor to make the biscuits. That's what they said. I think that's what they said.
They're good sports here. Nice place. Good people.
Organic. And the steaky thing here is really delicious. All right. So after we saw the waterfall, where did we go? Nobody remembers?
To the beach,
right. And we went to a place where they had ice cream. And I needed to put on, it seemed that they had a purple hat, that's what it was. They had a purple top hat sitting on a shelf, and it was lame.
It was the Nye Beach Sweet Shop.
All right. We're getting a food update. Everything's working out. So yeah, and then I they had like a lame hat on a shelf.
No, the hat came in the land whale.
What? No. So we got there. We got there, and it's like not only was this banana split a work of art and just amazing. But then on top of that, sitting on a shelf somewhere, they had some kind of purple hat that was like a purple top hat that was polka dotted and extremely lame. And so I, as I am in receipt of the banana split, I turned to Captain Badnock and I said, "We need the hat." And he popped out and fetched it, and then I donned the hat. And we took pictures all around, and I you know what, I got to pull out that picture where it's like a rock album picture. I was definitely, in fact, the thing in Beaverton, when I left Beaverton, I definitely felt like a rock star. I think they really went all out to make me feel like a rock star. It was great. So then we went down to, after the beach, we went down to where? Is that when we went and presented in, oh, right, because we're going from the beach to Eugene,
yeah.
And then I went
outside of Eugene in Creswell.
And then I went to go pull up my presentation. I thought I'm going to put a little polish on this presentation, only to find that my computer ate it, and all of its little crappinesses. That one of the things that it is especially crappy at is that it occasionally decides to eat a file, which is less than helpful. So I lost like 5 hours worth of work or so. So I had to recreate the presentation from scratch. And so I scrambled and scrambled and scrambled. And by the time we got there, a fellow named Jeff is the guy that put it on. And he came and kind of helped me, because he was the guy that said, okay, I want you to make a presentation that's a little different about urban versus rural. And so he helped me put it together at the last second. And then when we got there, wow, what a cool venue. And we got the most amazing pizza.
His daughter, Heidi Tunnel, has Heidi Tunnel's Catering and Event Center, which is where the venue was. And the pizzas were made in a wood-fired pizza oven that was made on the Tunnel Farm. And at the Tunnel Farm, they have a whole big display of how you put together a pizza oven. It was really pretty interesting. And the pizzas it makes, outstanding.
And they do weddings at that farm. They have the most beautiful barn you've ever seen, inside and outside. And they do weddings. In fact, Jeff's son is getting married there this weekend.
Not my son. The other Jeff.
Yeah.
They have a website too, I think. So if you're interested in getting married in a beautiful rural setting, you can check out their website. Sorry, I don't know what it is.
So I cobbled together the presentation, and I presented, and I kind of thought it was a little choppy, but people seemed to really like it. I had a lot of people come up afterwards, and they were very excited and enthused, and of course, as part of it, then it's kind of like I think that apparently there's a debate. There's pain in their neighborhood. There's pain in their group about urban versus local. Urban versus rural. And which is better if you're trying to be eco. And so I kind of feel like I have a lot of views that are not usually considered in this discussion, and that's kind of what I've presented, I guess. And as a quick 20-second summary, I think that you can be eco in both. Like 90% further down the road than what most people who believe they are eco currently are. But I do believe that rural does win by more than a nose on this one. When you get right down to it, and you're getting down to like, no, now you're as eco as you can be. I think that you have something to add, Ivan?
Well, it's important to consider that the city dwellers are also important in the permaculture movement, because permaculturists need to sell their produce and whatever they make, and people trying to live eco and want to save the world while staying in the city and holding on to their jobs are necessary as customers.
Well, that's true. That's true. And hopefully that they have a situation where they can also at least grow perhaps 30% of the food that they consume. Anyway, it was, you know, we filled 2 hours on the topic. And maybe when I polish up the presentation, I'll present it again sometime, and I'll record it, and we'll do that. Or maybe, you know, we'll end up making a podcast at some point, kind of do a twofer or something. I don't know. I had one person complain, and then yesterday Ivan and I talked about that, and I likened my style of permaculture presentation to polka music. That, yeah, so Jocelyn's giving a face because she hasn't heard this.
Yeah, polka music.
Why can't you pick something better than polka? Well, that was the point. The sour expression on your face is exactly it. So it's kind of like when people playing polka music go out and they play their polka music, they don't play it for the people that like screamer acid rock. They play it for the people who appreciate polka music. And so while I got somebody who wrote me something, I didn't even read it. I think I read about a quarter of it, and it's like this person's basically saying, you should do screamer acid rock. And they went to a polka thing, and it's like, but I want it to be screamer acid rock. And it's kind of like, yeah, but polka music's what it is. And so I do what I do for the people that like what I do. I don't do what I do. I'm not going to change what I do to appeal to those that want something else. And so, yeah, I didn't even finish reading that email that was sent to me. But I did get several emails, and a lot of people that really love it, although I thought it was, like, not my best presentation. So then we left there, and we made it to our campground thing last night, and now we're here. And now we're going to be going to another farm later today. And it's going to be not presenting. And then, oh, and we heard from Toby Hemenway. So Toby Hemenway is presenting at the same place I'm presenting at, what, in a couple of days? And so then Toby sent an email saying that I'm allowed to present, to poison his audience with my thoughts for 10 minutes and 0 seconds and no longer. Something about ironclad, I have to sign something in blood.
Right. And I said you'd agree to open up a vein to, you know, for his term. We haven't quite figured out the details just yet, but we will be in the same town on Sunday. So that should be fun.
All right. Okay, so now on to the topic at hand. We've caught you up on our tour, And now let's talk about natural cleansers, and which I think is an excellent topic. I think the first thing is like, well, first of all, I have to say that for myself, for years now, I have not had any, commercial cleanser, like, Comet. I haven't had any Comet or, 409, Formula 409, that spray-on stuff. I haven't had, and I don't know, I think my place, I keep a pretty clean place. Do I not? Those of you that have been to my place?
Yeah, you hire help to clean it for you.
Because I'm a lazy bastard, and I've always done that all of my adult life.
Yeah.
But they use, and I do a little bit myself, and they, you know, but yeah.
Basically, to clean, I think you need two main things. Very simple: baking soda and vinegar. So baking soda is your scouring powder for anything, anywhere. It doesn't scratch. It works great. I even used it once. This is years and years ago. I had a little fire on my stovetop, and it cut smoke all over the white painted cabinets above the stove, and a little bit of baking soda took all that, you know, greasy smoke right off the cabinets. So baking soda can scare off almost anything. It's great. That's all you need for a scouring powder. And it freshens and deodorizes pretty well while you use it. For any kind of glass cleaner or countertop cleaner or something, if you just want a spray bottle of that, vinegar water is the simplest for that. Sometimes it's not as streak-free as other things. So when I have my son cleaning around the house, he prefers to wipe it off with newspaper, because that seems to be less streaky and leave less lint behind. But some people put a drop of soap in the vinegar water to help it be less streaky as a glass cleaner. Other people use citrus peels in vinegar and water as a spray-on cleanser.
What if you put a little alcohol, just pure alcohol, in it?
Like a rubbing alcohol?
Yeah, because wouldn't that help with evaporation, and wouldn't that get the streaking out? I don't know. I'm just asking that question because I don't know.
Well, I haven't needed to put that in there, and I don't know how the alcohol would react with the vinegar. And not that it would do a big deal, probably, but I am careful about
wine that goes bad turns into vinegar.
True. So alcohol, it might. It does. The vinegar water doesn't streak in and of itself. If you've been using Windex, however, Windex or some other glass cleaner, those usually have wax in them. And sometimes you need to wash the glass to get that wax buildup off before your vinegar water will work well on it. Because those typically leave a wax behind to help it repel dirt and things like that. And if you use soapy water to wash off your glass cleaner residue, you'll have much better success with vinegar water glass cleansers.
So now when it comes to baking soda, I do want to mention that stuff about washing, about cleaning ovens. And I have I've cleaned several ovens myself, as opposed to, you know, oftentimes I have help. But when I clean an oven, and this also applies to like the little pan that goes underneath the coiled stove burner thing, and I use baking soda for that. And so what I've done is I just wet the baking soda, kind of cake it on wet, you know, just paper thin, a little thicker than paper thin, and then I leave it overnight. And the next day I take it off, and it is taken off like 90 to 95%. Of that stuff. And then I just put a paper thin layer over the stuff that was left behind, and that usually finishes the job. Because I'm really, really lazy, and I don't want to get into an oven and scrub, scrub, scrub. And that stuff that gets, I mean, basically it's the same kind of thing that's like seasoning on a cast iron skillet is what's on the inside of your oven. So you put it on there and soak it, and then the next day it just kind of wipes off, lickety split, There's no need to use that super freaky top. I mean, have you ever been in a house when somebody has sprayed on oven cleaner? I mean, man, that stuff. I mean, basically, your instinct is get away from the toxic shitstorm. And I think that whatever is in that, I suspect is horrible. I mean, there's warnings all over those canisters and stuff like that. Whereas baking soda, I think, is very safe, very inert.
Right. Well, and that was part of Travis's question was, you know, what about all the cleaners that are in the store, you know? And here I thought I joined one of these multi-level marketing things because a good friend talked me into it, and they were all supposed to be based on tea tree oil, all the cleansers, and that they were supposed to be really, really good. And one of their cleansers that was like a counter cleanser and kind of like supposedly a more natural version of a 409 type cleanser, it ate my toilet seat. It ate the coating, the surface off of my toilet seat. I actually had to replace my toilet seat because of this supposedly more natural cleanser. And, I don't think that's something I want to have around. If it'll eat away the plastic coating on the toilet seat, I don't think I want to be breathing that.
Yeah, that sounds creepy.
So interesting.
We blame the cleanser, not the toilet seat. Maybe it was just a bad plastic, and a good cleanser went bad dealing with a bad plastic.
Jocelyn!
Now, the vinegar, I know the vinegar water wouldn't have done that, and I switched back to vinegar water. It didn't eat things. It ate the chrome. It started eating the chrome off of the faucet as well.
Yeah, Jeff.
It was bad.
Nothing to say, Jeff?
Bad chrome.
Chrome goes bad.
And the other one I want to mention is the one that's called Simple Green. You know, years ago I actually thought that was a more natural alternative. That's actually been listed, I think, Environmental Working Group or one of those agencies that said, oh, this is Simple Green. That's just the color of it. It's not a green product.
Okay. So, all right, looking at our list. Here's one that's like one of the most natural things. If you've got a clogged drain, rather than getting Drano, which, by the way, when I was 11 years old, I woke up in the middle of the night to see a fireman up close. And he scooped me up. I think I was 11. I may have been 9. Now that I think, I was in the fourth grade. How old are you when they're fourth grade?
Nobody scooped you ever.
Nobody scooped. Those firemen are pretty strong. It's true. I was a giant size all my life. But when I was in the fourth grade, I woke up. I was waking up in the middle of the night. There was a fireman in my room, and he scooped me up. And I got to go out the window, down a ladder, and it turns out that what happened is that somebody made a bomb out of Drano, and in my apartment building that I lived in as a kid, they decided that the laundry room didn't need to be there anymore, so they used their Drano bomb to make their statement, and somehow I slept through all the excitement. And so, Drano, wow, there's a powerful something or another in that, isn't there?
Yeah.
Just right for... So, but here's an amazing thing is that, one of the things that I do is I generally, they've got all these little screens and things in your showers and your sinks and stuff like that. I usually take those out because I kind of feel like whatever that stuff is piling up, I'm like, I wanted to go to the same place the toilet goes to, and it turns out they're wired up the same way. The house innards all go to the same place. The stuff that goes down the sink goes to the same place that goes down the toilet. And it's like, I want that to go on down there. Just keep right on going. So I pull out the screens that prevent that, and it's like, go on down there. And then if those things ever get plugged up, then I use a drain zip, and I think I've mentioned this in a previous podcast. It's just a piece of plastic that costs like a buck to a buck and a half, something like that. And it's a long, slender looking thing, about a foot and a half long with like little ribs on it. And then you shove it down in there and you pull it back, and it's got all kinds of scary things it found down there. And then you just go and feed it to the toilet. And that's all I do.
I think there's a thread about it out on Hermes with links to where you can find those. So it's a very simple mechanical way to clear the drain. Works great. You gave me one, too. I've used it many times.
It went in your Christmas stocking.
Oh, yeah, lovely.
But it was new and clean.
Right, yeah, good. Thank you. You didn't give me a used one. But if that doesn't work, if it's down somewhere farther that the little drain zip can't reach, because the drain zip's, what, 18, 24 inches?
Yeah, something like that.
So if it's down farther where it won't reach, what I do is use baking soda and vinegar again. You can dump about a cup of baking soda in your drain, pour about a cup of vinegar on that, and it'll start foaming up. And you just let it sit for about 10 minutes and foam and foam and foam and do its thing, and then pour boiling water over that about 10 minutes later. And that will clear out grease drains, hair drains, you know, it works pretty well. You might need to repeat it a couple times if the drain's really bad, but it works.
One all-time big solution for this problem is to quit shitting in your drinking water and try a 5-gallon bucket instead and compost it.
Good. So you don't have to worry about drains. Huh?
Well, I think where you're going, like when we got drains, like I'm thinking like the sink drain will sometimes get plugged up, or the shower drain. And I want to make it clear to you, I do not shit in my sink or shit in my shower drain, or shit in my shower, or the kitchen sink. I don't shit in those things. So far I've never had, I mean, at the toilet, and the thing that I usually, if the toilet ever gets plugged, is a plunger, and that always, I've never had that fail. But hey, that's just me, man. I think we've learned a lot about you, really. Because the idea never occurred to me.
Well, it's possible, since they all go the same place, that some might be clogged from the toilet, and, you know. But anyway.
All right, the next thing on the list is that I had, I confess, and I am a lazy bastard pig, but all of my adult life, my policy has always been that I've always hired somebody to do some housekeeping for me, and I always said, oh, I have to work harder in order to afford it because I'm so horrible at it, and yet I like to have a tidy house, but I'm not a tidy person, so... But for a while I had a housekeeper that had her magic cleaning towel. It was some kind of fabric, and I have to admit I don't know anything about it. It was some kind of fabric that she had that somehow repelled yucky things, and she didn't need any soap. She just used water to do all the cleaning around the house. And it had to be a really extremely tough thing to use something else, and it's like I don't know what the towel thing was made out of, but I know that the woman was very eco-centric and very concerned about eco-things, and I have to admit I never looked into it further than that. Maybe other people have more information on that, and they can talk about it at Permies.
Could it be microfiber?
I think it was a microfiber. It was one of the new space rags, I think. And I remember I gazed upon it at the organic grocery store, like either the Good Food Store or Whole Foods once. I'm like, oh, there it is. I see it.
And how they manufacture it. Because it might be there's a manufacturing process that
offends me.
Well, that we should learn about before we give a total blanket endorsement.
Yeah, I'm not giving a blanket endorsement. I'm saying it's a possible thing to think about.
Yeah.
So it's an item on our list. Moving on, borax. I think when combating mold, I think that borax is the best stuff. But here's an interesting thing. I'm having a hard time finding it. I think that borax is so cheap and environmentalists like it. You can't patent it because it's, you know, basically something that's mined. I think that it's being phased out so that way people can make more money selling more expensive cleaners that they can, I don't know, maybe there's a... Anyway, borax is cheap. It has an extremely low toxicity. So it's like, that's always something that I keep in mind whenever I use it, is that it does have a toxicity element. But when it comes to fighting mold and funguses, I don't think there's anything better. And I want to make sure to use a small residue of it in such a way that it does not come into contact with people. So I would use it on a wall where people don't tend to like put their hands on the wall there if there was mold. And it would keep the mold from coming back. So ceilings are good, but I would not want to put it where people, like, some people use borax to fight fleas, but they put it on the carpet. Then people walk on the carpet, and now, granted, it's a low toxicity, but it's still a toxicity.
How much lower toxicity do you think it is than bleach? Because I know you advocate borax instead of bleach.
For certain things where people use bleach, like when combating mold, that they would use, and a bleach is like extremely toxic, and bleach is, I mean, it's just pure poison. It's just a kill everything poison. So I would say that borax is more effective at fighting mold than bleach. And at the same time, I think I'm going to just make up a number. I'm pulling this number out of my butt, and my butt has turned out to be far more reliable than a lot of scientists working for the bleach industry. I'm making that up too. But I'm going to say 800 times. I'm going to say that bleach is 800 times more toxic than borax. I have not owned bleach for probably a decade. I cannot imagine that case where you would ever use bleach, or where I would ever use. I can't imagine. What would be one?
Well, when you feel the need to bleach your eyes after watching Fox News, can you exchange that for it?
if you feel that you need to pluck out your eyes due to something that you've seen, I'm going to recommend that instead of bleach, to use perhaps a knife. You're just creeping me out, dude.
Yeah. Now, some people, when they're storing their well water or their tap water for later use, they're creating their own bottles of stored water. Sometimes they put a little drop of bleach in there to store water. I'm not sure if anyone, maybe a listener, has an alternative to that.
Art Ludwig wrote a whole book about it.
Oh, of course. Okay.
He doesn't use any bleach in storing water.
Okay.
He talks about when you store water correctly, the quality of the water goes up in time.
Interesting. Okay. Well,
that guy's good. We're going to see him in a few days.
That's exciting. Yeah. Oh, well, I'm glad I brought it up then.
Great. Did you have something on that one, Jeff? So I'm going to throw it out as a challenge.
Good.
I want people that are listening to this podcast to come up with and post it out of Permies. And like, what would be a thing, what would be an instance where you can use bleach that there's not an organic equivalent or something that, you know, is cleaner, healthier, organic-ier equivalent or superior? Like, where bleach is superior. I'd like to hear about it. I'd like to find out. I don't think that there's a case. I haven't come up with anything. And I think my house is kept very, very clean. And so I don't see a need for bleach anywhere. So borax. Once in a while with laundry, and this is, it's always something I use only a tiny bit. If my laundry ever starts to develop any kind of odor to it, like laundry odor, like sometimes laundry just has laundry odor, then, and this is about once every 2 months, I'll put like a tablespoon of borax into the laundry. And that's the other thing too. When it comes to laundry, I use hardly any detergent. I use probably a quarter to a tenth of what the manufacturer recommends.
Besides using borax in your laundry, vinegar's a good deodorizer as well.
Okay.
In fact, I learned this from my former mother-in-law that this was before people weren't allowed to smoke in public places. You would go to a restaurant or somewhere, and even though you're in the non-smoking section, you would come home and your coats would smell like smoke. You put them in the coat closet, then the whole coat closet smells like smoke. My former mother-in-law would take a bowl of vinegar, put it in the coat closet, and it would clear out that smoke smell.
Wow.
It's fabulous. So, yeah.
I have a concern about using borax in laundry that I need to share, and that is that when you're on a septic tank or a gray water system or anything like that, now currently where I'm at right now is a septic tank, but if I were on a gray water system, I think I would not use it. And this could be a good question to ask Art Ludwig when we see him. I'd like to hear what he thinks about it, but I would not use it on a gray water system. But on a septic tank, even on a septic tank, I have a little bit of like, it gives me a stomach ache to use it. And I'm hoping that I'm like riding that line between like.
Try vinegar next time.
Maybe try vinegar, yeah. Although I wonder what vinegar would do to the, because I'm thinking of like the little bacteria that are working hard for you in your septic tank, and this is basically poison to them. And so it's like, I think, is my getting my laundry to smell a little bit better worth it? Maybe I should come up with a different technique. And what would that technique be? I'm not sure. But I have to admit that this is like one space where the things that I do, I feel like I need a better solution than what I have now. And this is what I have now. I would like something that gets the job done and isn't making the things out, all those bacteria that are out there working so hard, it doesn't make them sad. I'd rather come up with something that makes them happy. But I don't know what that is yet. Next note we have is that when you're cleaning cast iron, a lot of times, I mean, of course, when you're cleaning cast iron, we can make a whole video about, or a whole podcast about that, and we already have a video about that, but the number one thing to do with cast iron is that, first of all, can you just mop it out a little bit and be done? The next one is, if there's just a little something stuck on there, just a little bit of salt. A little bit of salt, a little bit of rub, like 2 seconds, it's gone, and you're done. And so that one's, I think, extremely organic and a really good one. Next on the list, where I do dishes, I do buy dish soap. I go to like Whole Foods or the Good Food Store in Missoula, and I usually do my dish soap shopping. Someday I would like to move away from dish soap and focus on saponins instead. But when you've got a lot of grease on your stuff, that's soap's job, is to remove grease. And I have to say, when I shop for dish soap at the moment, maybe I should come up with a better strategy. I actually pop off the caps and go and smell for what smells the loveliest. That's how I choose which dish soap to go with, which one I like the best. I know that's stupid. It's not probably a good way to go. But, ooh, this smells nice.
It's an artificial fragrance that came right out of the laboratory.
Well, I like to hope that at the Good Food Store and Whole Foods that they're being very careful in what they buy.
They have more natural brands, hopefully more natural, more safe.
So the way I go about selecting dish soap could use some optimization. However, near where I do my dishes, I feel it's really important. This is something an old housemate of mine taught me, and that is I no longer use a sponge. They're just like a breeding ground for funky, icky things.
When my kids were in preschool, they were very, very concerned about spreading germs, and this preschool had it down how not to spread germs. The kids never got sick from each other in this one preschool, and one thing they did is they used sponges all the time, but every day, at the end of the day, and I don't use a microwave now, so this isn't really what I would do, but they would microwave the sponges to try and kill off any of the funk that built up in the sponge. And I'm with you. I don't like to use sponges because they do just hold funk in there. But they microwave them 30 seconds every day, heated them up enough to kill anything.
Which I'm working on getting rid of, eliminating all microwave use. But real quick, I want to say to that, is that organic restaurants tend to use hydrogen peroxide instead of bleach because restaurants are required to use bleach, although you can get by it by using hydrogen peroxide. And at the same time, there was something Washington State University did something where they were replacing hydrogen peroxide and bleach, replacing both of those, with lactic acid. I believe they got it from milk, that they were having amazing success with sterilization using lactic acid.
Here. Why don't I hold this for a little while, and you can finish up so we can get on the road again. But that reminds me. So this company that I was buying what I thought were natural cleansers from, they did have another cleanser that used the essential oil from thyme. And the thyme plant, the herb thyme, is also antimicrobial. And I can never say that word correctly, sorry. So it kills bacteria, it kills viruses. And so some people, it may not be health department approved yet. You know, you may have to resort to the lactic acid or the hydrogen peroxide in place of the bleach. but Thyme oil is supposed to be really good in that space for disinfecting. But I think where you were starting to go, you know, with the sponges is finding tools that you'd use for dishes or counters or for scrubbing that dry out quickly, because that's a big factor. The moisture will feed the crud that wants to grow in those things. So finding little scrubby pads that dry out quickly or washcloths that dry out quickly and making sure they laid out to dry thoroughly every day. I know my grandma would knit these non-scratch scrubby pads out of
brilliant
nylon netting out of the tool that you use to make tutus, you know. She knits those, and that was just, that's, I've grown up with my grandma's scrubby pads. They don't scratch. It was nice. But also for the cast iron, using, you know, something mechanical to scrub it. Some people will also grab horsetail and use that to scrub things because it's...
Loofah.
Or loofah sponges. That would probably be no scratch.
I've got that weird thing next to my sink that used to be from a dishwasher that I rescued from a an abandoned dishwasher, and I set that next to my sink, and I keep a washcloth because some things you kind of need a washcloth to kind of rub, and so I get a style that dries easily, and then I drape it over that, and that's where I keep all the things I'm trying to dry out, so that way they don't have funky grody things festering. But sponges are the worst. For microwaves, I want to just mention really quick the thing where I've seen it. This is like the third time I've seen it, and I kind of feel like I want to repeat the experiment that like third graders are doing. And what third graders are doing is that they'll take water, they'll divide the water in half. Half the water they'll go and boil on a stovetop, and the other half of the water they will boil in a microwave.
Wait, wasn't that considered a hoax?
There's, well, I'm getting to that.
Okay,
so keep your pants on.
Mm-hmm.
all right, so then the idea is that you boiled the water, one half is boiled on the stove, one half is boiled in the microwave, and then the water is cooled, and then there's a plant, two plants, each plant gets water, cooled water. And then the one in the microwave, the plant is sad, and the one that is... from the stovetop, the plant is happy. Now, I don't understand how that can be, and there is reports that it's a hoax. And at the same time, I keep seeing this, and so I keep kind of feeling like Mythbusters-esque. Like, ooh, this would be great. Like, if we put this podcast out and we're still on the road, maybe Permies people, pod people, can do the experiment, and by the time we get back, we'll have this whole thread out of Permies of like five different people that have done the experiment and reported the results. Wouldn't that be awesome?
That would be awesome.
But in the meantime, I've got the microwave ovens have always given me the heebie-jeebies, but up until about a year ago, I still used one periodically, but now I'm seriously phasing it out.
Well, we do have that one thread where Thelma put nettles in the microwave and they caught fire.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah. She was a little bit surprised that her nettles would catch fire. It was a little alarming. So we haven't talked about citrus oil. I know I was struggling with getting odor out of reusing jar lids. You know, they'll have the rubber seal in them. And then sometimes pickle juice or some other strong odor will get in the rubber seal, and someone recommended, just use a citrus peel because the citrus oils are deodorizing and they're also degreasing. So there is a commercial product called Citrusol that can help degrease, and it's a bit safer than buying the Goo Gone or some of the other degreasers that are really heavy.
I own a little bit of that, and probably about once a month use just a pinch of that. I use as little as possible.
Yeah. Well, since I reuse jars a lot, I like to take the labels off. I like them to look clean and tidy, and I feel like stuff grows in the labels if they get wet when you wash them. But then they leave glue residue behind from the label. A lot of times you can get that off with a little bit of vegetable oil. You don't even have to resort to the citrus oil. So sometimes I keep around used vegetable oil just for taking off old glues. use vegetable oil that I may not reuse for food, but I will use it on getting label goo off. So we just have two items left. We wanted to talk about saponin plants, and making soap.
All right. So, saponin plants.
Are we taking those with?
No. First of all, I've learned today that I like pumpernickel bread. I've probably had it before, but and this is that was fun. Okay. There's soap nuts, and people say, oh, okay, you take the soap nuts and you throw it in your laundry, and it releases saponin, which basically soap-like stuff, soapy stuff, but you never had to use lye to make it, which is something that's it's like a personal weirdness that I have. I like the idea of not having lye around. Other people are like, oh, it's not a big deal. And a lot of people make a living making soaps and stuff. So I'm kind of like, I feel a little like I'm in a minority, like I'm being too much of a whiner or a nervous Nelly. When people make soaps, it's like, okay, I'll take your soaps because now you've made lye totally safe. And you have the lye risk, and I don't. But I like the idea of saponins much better because no lye was ever involved, which makes me comfortable and happy and things like that. I do want to say, though, that with soap nuts, the idea is that they put them in the laundry, and then they leave them in the laundry through the rinse cycle. And I kind of think, don't you end up with, like, little soapy bits?
No.
That's what... sometimes, maybe. I don't know if they leave them in through the rinse cycle. I do know some people actually create their laundry soap out of the soap nuts.
Yeah.
And they make kind of... go through a quick little process and create...
Exactly where I was going with that. And so I know that people do put them in the laundry and they leave them, like the recommended thing to do is to put them in the laundry is leave them in the laundry. Then you pull them out before putting them in the dryer or whatever. Which, by the way, I hope most of the people listening to this podcast have drying racks or a clothesline or something like that. And they dry their clothes that way instead of using any kind of clothes dryer. So, yeah, exactly what you're saying is, it's like, you know, make a little bit of something. But the problem is when you soak it, then it is something that will spoil. So you got to soak it shortly before you're going to do your laundry. And then you have your soap, which you can pour in to your laundry like a liquid soap. But it's going to be very watered down. You got to pour a lot in. And then you got to dry them again. It spoils. So that's something to keep in mind. But I like that process much better. So, there's the soap nuts. There's also, like, my understanding is, I believe, horse chestnut or horse chestnut leaves, I can't remember which, will produce soponins.
There's some other wild plants that do as well. I remember being told about one in my permaculture design course when Tom Ward came in as a guest instructor. He was talking about some plants with
open end properties.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. What's left on the list? Is the list done? Is that where the list is gone?
Making soap with lye. You had concerns about that. We already covered that. I think.
Oh, right. I don't. Well, the other thing is that, okay, yeah. So I have concerns with the lye.
Yeah. I think we covered everything that was kind of in our knowledge set, I think. Was it something you remember?
Yeah. I'd like to mention, I learned from Carla Emery's the Encyclopedia of Country Living that when you have lard that has gone rancid, you can make soap of it, but that would be with the lye.
Right. So, anybody have anything else? We're ready to hit the road again? All right, if you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com where we talk about clean living, homesteading, and permaculture all the time.